Hi everyone, I am so excited about today's episode of Beauty Bosses with my friend, the amazing Alexa Von Tobel.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. So for those of you guys who have not yet encountered Alexa, you really should. She is the founder and CEO of LearnVest, a personal finance website. She's the founder and managing partner of Inspired Capital, so she's also an amazing investor. And she is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Financially Fearless, and the author of the newer book, Financially Forward, as well as the host of Inc's, the Founder Project with Alexa Von Tobel. So many different hats. And you're a mom of three.
And I'm a mom of three, which I think is our like most fun and most challenging role.
And the most important, but we always bury the lead.
We bury the lead. Yes. Mom of three, of a five-year-old, a six-year-old, and a nine-year-old.
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm so happy to have you on the podcast because I think of you as kind of our generation's personal finance expert. And you've brought personal finance front and center to so many people in such an accessible way for so long. And so I wanted to talk about how you started that and what was your journey like as a young and then young adult and then, you know, person you are today.
So I've always loved math. And growing up, I remember thinking to myself, I went to Harvard undergrad. And when I was there, I just kept saying, I'm going to go find the class about personal finance. And lo and behold, there was no class. And I kept being like, this is really wild. How is there no class? And I ended up working at Morgan Stanley for a little bit out of school and making money for the first time as a 21, 22 year old. And it really just struck me that personal finance should be taught in every single high school, graduate school. It should be taught in elementary school.
Because kids today don't know anything about money. Like kids, not just kids, a lot of Americans have no idea how to manage spending and saving. What is an emergency fund? What's a retirement account? What are the most common mistakes that people make with personal finance and the biggest white space areas that people need to learn?
So truly, last summer, I had this like epiphany where I wrote this book. This is the new kids book I just wrote called Money Matters with Rebel Girls. And Dr. Devkin, I had this moment where I was like, I have three little kids and they're not going to learn about money anywhere. And if you teach somebody about money young, they can avoid the mistakes, the credit card debt, the hurting their credit score, et cetera. But LearnVest and all the companies I built in my career, I was helping people in their 20s and 30s and 40s fix problems. And it just was like this moment where I was like, that's it. I've got to go younger. I've got to go write this book and pay it forward to this next generation. And so the biggest thing you can teach them is, in plain English, a second grader can understand how to not make money mistakes, which is credit cards. You have to pay them back in full every month. You have to help people understand that you always are saving, always. It's a habit that we form just like brushing our teeth and putting money away. And so it's about them seeing these really good relationships with money. And you'll love this, especially since you're a mom of six. As early as 5 years old, a University of Michigan study just found that kids watch parents. And if you engage with money in a matter-of-fact, positive, upbeat way, even if there's not all the money in the world, they will absorb that and have a positive relationship to money. Whereas if it's super stressful, toxic, lots of anxiety, they avoid money as grownups, and they've seen that correlation translate. And so I just think the takeaway here is for all of the parents out there, just keep money simple.
Yeah.
It's okay to talk about.
I love this idea, and I'm trying to enact some of this stuff with my kids in the most basic ways, inspired by you, of course. But I think that for so many groups of people, money is not only taboo, like it's impolite to talk about, which
correct.
I understand, but that taboo extends into your own personal life, your family, your relationship partner, and people get themselves into big, big problems because there are somewhat simple things to understand that are just not brought to the forefront. So it's great what you're doing.
That's exactly right. And I do kind of like the rip the Band-Aid off and say, everyone thinks money can be stressful. All of us do. But actually, the sooner you start talking about it and understanding it, where does it come from? How do you save it? What are the questions? There's no such thing as a dumb question. Actually, you can really empower people. And one thing I realized, if you can teach young kids as early as second grade about the wallet, you can empower their entire lives. Money, as we both know, sitting here as hardworking women, is choice. It gives people choice. It gives people options. And so again, if you know second grade math, you can learn the basics of personal finance. And so that's why I decided to write the book Money Matters.
Okay, great. And so let's rewind back to when you were a Harvard undergrad interested in math, and then you started a company at a young age. Tell us about that.
So I started writing a business plan. It was the only way I knew to get this idea that had been in my head out, called Learn Best, which stood for Learn, Earn, Invest. And little did I know, you know, the technology boom was happening all around us. Mark Zuckerberg was actually my classmate, Harvard undergrad, building Facebook. And I had always been entrepreneurial. And so I started writing this business plan. I went back to business school at Harvard. Fall of 2008 happened. Lehman Brothers went under. And I did what seemed very logical to me at the time, very insane for others. I dropped out. I said, I got to go build this company that's been really rattling around in my brain for too long now. I've got to go do it. And so moved to New York City. I was 24, 25 years old, sole founder, went lights on and ended up building Think TurboTax for financial planning for the masses. And 5 years later, 3 million-ish users, got acquired by Northwestern Mutual for $375 million and had poured my life into that. But also then became a certified financial planner and all these other things. Because I said, if I'm going to build this, I've got to actually get good at it and I've got to learn it. So through that process, became a personal finance expert and wrote some books and all those things, but really in the spirit of building this tech platform to empower the country.
Was it scary for you in 2008 with the whole collapse of Lehman and the financial markets to be like, here I am with like planting your flag in the big city of New York?
I mean, like scary. I actually, I remember this. I cried the entire plane ride to New York. Sobbed, sat there. You know when you sit next to someone and they're just sobbing and you assume something like, bad is
happening?
A lot's
going on.
You're like, ooh, like, can I pass you? And I was just like, what did I just do? I just took my life and like ripped the tablecloth out from under it and everything shattered. And then I had this moment which like something happened, something clicked where I was like, that wasn't scary. I'm like listening to my instincts. And as scary as this is, it's not that scary. I'm alive. I'm breathing. Okay. And I opened my laptop up the next morning and I started working and I just felt this momentum of what it means to build a company, which is when you put 150% of your time and energy into one thing, you can start feeling the ball rolling faster. And the next thing I knew, I was hiring people and making up things as I went along because I was so young. And I really started to have the time of my life.
And that's awesome.
I never have expected it to have been successful, but I was doing it for all the right reasons. And I think to my core, I really am an entrepreneur.
That's so cool. And how did you acquire 3 million users for LearnBest?
So it was crazy, but it was back in the day where there were many fewer things online. Like I think today, trying to break through the noise, everything was online. This was so early. There were maybe two things for like young people and money online. One was called like FiLife or something. I mean, it was like there was nothing. And I don't know if you remember Daily Candy and some of these publications.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Real simple.
This was like blogs were just barely 100%. A thing.
Daily Candy wrote about us on a weekend in January, around like January 2nd. And we ended up with 10,000 email addresses signing up for our first newsletter. And you just quickly realize if you do one thing and you do it for 7 years, you begin to amass users. And that got the snowball going. But again, there wasn't a lot of competition at the time. So it was just a totally different time. And we were there early and went lights on to help people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s have access to a financial advisor for an affordable price. And it was open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our financial planning firm online, which at the time, like, again, it's digital. So I was like, we can be open 24 hours a day. And my team was like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, it's 2010. We can just be open all the time. And it's the internet. And it just was these simple things that at the time didn't seem that profound. But banks used to only be open for 2 or 3 hours a time on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was just a totally different. I mean, there was no Instagram. And so you just one user at a time and it starts to collect.
No, it's
seven
like when
years
our parents
later.
Tell us about how TV used to end at like 9 p.m. Exactly. You're like, wait, how is that possible?
You're like, you didn't have 4,000 choices in 3 minute snippets.
I know.
What do you mean?
But that's amazing. And so everything coalesced. It was the right place, the right idea, the right time, the right stage of zeitgeist and internet development, and it all just happened.
That's right. And then one day woke up and they had me on the cover of Forbes about the millennial wallet revolution. And I literally said to my husband at the time, I was like, I don't know when this became mainstream because I've been chipping away at it one user at a time. And now fintech is a mainstream concept and people were innovating in the wallet in all these incredible ways. But I was so in it that like I finally got my head up and I was like, what has happened? This is mainstream now. Oh my goodness. Yeah. But it wasn't when I started. And I think that's everyone out there, I want you to have the guts. It's okay to be early. It's okay to go do something contrarian. It's okay to be, I always say, when the world zigs, zag. When everyone runs this way, go over here and see what's different and see what's new. And just one day you'll pick your head up and be like, wow, this is much bigger than I expected.
I think this is why being an Ivy League dropout is such a flex. Because if you become a Harvard Business School dropout, the opportunity cost of that decision is so high that you know you have to have some great ideas and some bravado.
Or you're an idiot. It's one of the two.
But it's definitely one of the two.
It's like, you know, most days I was like, I'm the idiot.
There's many talented people who have that little line on their CV, and it's, you know, there are people who are just a little bit more action oriented and a little bit more willing to you know, risk it all on one turn of pitch and toss, like the poem says.
That's totally,
you know, that's so cool.
That's right. And I think at some point, like a little voice in you gets so loud that you have to listen to that voice and know that it's time for you to go. And,
you know, and what? This is a basic tenet of surgery, and surgery residencies of all different kinds of backgrounds and all over. People say that the rule of an excellent surgeon is to always listen to your little voice. It's sort of like in surgery, it means your conscience of doing the right thing for the patient and kind of optimizing every tiny little decision. But I feel like in the real world, your little voice is what guides you toward, you know, the person that you want to be with, the job you want to take, the passion you want to chip away at. It's cool. Little voice is important.
And I think learning
maybe
to
your next
listen.
Book.
Yeah, that's my fourth book. I'm like, I run a venture fund. I have so much more work to do. I think that there's something to be said about that we all have a little voice. And I think actually learning to listen to that voice is actually the hardest thing because it often says things that are hard. And I think that's actually, I think learning to trust your little voice is really the goal.
What is the best financial decision that you or someone you know has made? And what is the worst financial decision that you know has made?
Well, I think the best financial decision that I've made and...
I really want to ask for you, but
no,
I didn't want to make it
I
too
love
specific.
This. No, I love this. Is honestly, I think, trusting and betting on myself. And whether that was building LearnVest or, you know, teaming up with my incredible partners and building Inspired, which is a venture fund that is now 5+ years old and we back amazing entrepreneurs all over the country. But I think just the trust of loving and building and trusting, going out and doing things from a clean sheet of paper, knowing, and that's hard, that's scary, as you know so, so well. You've built an empire and it's hard. You have to put in hard work every day. But so I think that's my best one. I think my worst financial decision, actually it's simple, which is, and I don't make it anymore, but it is, you should have a financial plan. And a financial plan simply says, here's what I need in life. Here's exactly how I'm saving for it. And then you set it and you forget it, which means no emotion is welcome in the equation. So if the markets trade off, you're not allowed to show up and edit your plan. Your plan is fixed. It's permanent. Unless your needs change, unless something happens. And I think that, and we make this mistake, but you get emotional and you see the market go down and you mistrust your plan, but a good financial plan. And so when I was younger, in my 20s, I would, as I was learning to become a certified financial planner, I think that's why you also always want to work with somebody else, an expert, in the same way you go to a doctor to make better decisions. You need a real money expert to be there to say, no, your emotion is not welcome in this equation. This is a math equation and the math is solid. And so I think that's where people get tripped up. The markets trade off, something bad happens and they sell a stock or they get out of them. When you're like, why are you trading out of that? You don't need that for 35 years. You don't care if it trades down. So those are the things that really my 20s taught me and got really good at being like, my emotions don't matter at all when it comes to money.
I love that. Yeah, it's hard to stay neutral and measured in all your actions. And I think that we see that all around us. So now you're the founder and managing partner of Inspired Capital. So you've switched gears a little bit. How did you decide to go into investing professionally, and what are some of your big challenges?
Sure, I love this. So I started actually in venture at Insight Venture Partners, and like really was attracted first to the side of the table of like watching founders build. Knew I was an entrepreneur. Had my hand at that part of one company that got acquired by Facebook, and then sole founder of a company that I sold to North Rush Mutual. And through that, just like watching the reps, I started having my own little angel fund and backed some really great companies of many shapes and sizes, many that we could list here. And I realized I loved being a partner to the founder, being part of that, and giving them money and helping them go and solve huge problems. And this is really corny, but it's so true, which is that if you really believe in innovation and changing the world, making it better, which is what I get out of bed every day and really believe in doing, I think we all have a big responsibility to make the world better. One of the most powerful ways to do it is actually via venture capital, which is, it is an incredible economic incentive. You can take a founder like yourself and say, let's go solve a wild problem, one that's probably societally important, really big, like climate change, for example. And setting up a company in so many ways is the right economic engine to motivate people to work 6-7 days a week to go and pour their might into solving that problem. And so one day that really started clicking intellectually in my 20s, early 30s, and I realized like it was the right thing for me to go and stand up. And we always talk about, you know, at Inspired, we talk about this concept of an inspired future, which is, we are fraught with loneliness epidemic, and we are having climate change issues, and education is set back in ways that is not great post-COVID. And there's all these huge challenges. The world is filled with challenge. You know these better than anybody, 40% obesity, et cetera, et cetera. Really fabulous entrepreneurs can go out and come up with solutions. And that is a really fun thing to be part of every day. Amazing. To say, how do we help you build your businesses? How do we help you go faster? And how do we give you any unfair advantage we can to succeeding?
Yeah, I was listening to Danny Meyer from Shake Shack. He's talking. He's the best. So smart, too. And he had this cool anecdote about how life isn't about solving problems. Life isn't about avoiding problems, because the problems are inevitable. And successful business and a happy life is really about solving those problems and coming up with innovative, fun ways to do it. Have fun while you do it with cool people, and like that's the meaning of life. So it's like there's this constant state of problems and solutions, and we just iterate ad infinitum until it's like better.
That's
so cool. I love that.
I call it doing puzzles, because when my little kids were like, mommy, what do you do for a living? And I was like, you know how you like to get on the ground and do your puzzles? Mommy does puzzles. They're just bigger, and they involve people and money and problems, and constantly mommy is solving puzzles, and mommy loves it. And my kids like totally got what I did then. And I was like, mommy's just doing bigger puzzles that are more complicated, and she loves them. And so I do think problem solving and the curiosity of how to creatively problem solve, it's just a fun thing to do. And at Inspired, our team is amazing. And I've worked with most of them for 10 years, 15 years, my partners and my teammates, and we get to do it together. And it's just, it's incredibly joyful.
I love that. And I think that really speaks to how interesting it is to look at ideas at different stages of development and decide which ones to amplify. Okay, so we talked about before how we're both mothers together of 9 children, 3 and 6, which is a lot of responsibility.
Oh my God.
Yes, and it's one of our most important jobs, I know. When you are raising kids, your own kids, or talking to other kids, or speaking to kids more largely as a group with your book, how do you think people should raise the next generation to not be overly focused on money and acquisitiveness? Because it's a fine line between teaching kids about how to spend and invest and save and so forth, and having children who become spoiled brats, for better or worse. And how do we kind of teach kids that money doesn't actually mean anything. It just represents the things that you could have.
It's an amazing question, and it's something that I, so punchline, I say this all day long in my head, which is, so money is not, it's a tool. We literally invented money because we were carrying around pelts, and it was meant to barter, to say, you have milk, I have cheese, we need to swap because we both need some of the other, and it made it more effective. It's designed to be a tool. At some point, we lost the plot, and there's been times where we've either worshipped it, where it's far too prominent, far too important, or fundamentally ignored it, where, you know, you're the ostrich head in the sand. And there's incredible amounts of research done where after a certain income level, the latest report was $75,000. It's sort of been inflation adjusted to $100,000 in a household. More money doesn't necessarily mean more happiness. And there's great professors who have talked a lot about there's really no end to money. Like you truly, this amazing professor once took people that said, how much money do you need to be happy? And someone would say three times as much. And then you take the person making that amount. And that person would say three times as much. And the punchline is it's comparative. So there's always more. So the way I like to think about it is there's always going to be somebody with a lot more. Many people. And there will always be some people with a lot less. Many people. The goal is to just be able to be in control of your wallet. That's it. And the goal is to be able to think about your current wants and needs and keep it simple. And the purpose of life is not money, it's relationships, it's connection. And that is a very important shift to have in your mind. And so you need enough money to be stable. And after that, mathematically, it's not bringing happiness. And in fact, the pursuit of only money almost guarantees not being happy.
Yeah.
So I always say money does not equal happiness. Anytime I give a money talk to any room, whether it's a bunch of second graders or a bunch of grownups, money's not happiness. It's just not. It's stability. And so once you can make sure you're stable, any extra isn't necessarily moving the dial forward. And so I think it's a really important shift. And it's a tool, and it was meant there so that we could every day move through our life. That's the goal. It's that simple.
If you were able to control the finances of a big bustling city like New York, are there things that you think we should be investing as a city in more?
Oh my gosh. Also a few things I would say. I think one of the most incredible ways to spend a dollar is to educate people, plain and simple. I mean, you really can take anybody and they can go anywhere with education. So I am a huge believer in that. The other really powerful thing, and this is a good hack for every parent, you especially, because you have six children. As soon as your children start earning any money, and they can do that from babysitting, or like my little girl Toby sells bracelets, she's nine, that money can actually go into a Roth IRA. Now you can add 15 years of retirement savings onto your kid's life, and the magic of money is compounding interest. So I'm a huge fan of thinking anytime something can compound. So starting savings accounts for kids early, helping parents across the city get their kids to start saving for college early, building that muscle, it compounds. A lot of compounding interest, it's not magic, it's math. And so that's one thing I would just say, like in every city, I would focus on education. How do we create compounding mechanisms for all kids to be able to be empowered in their education? And then how do we do that as a city earlier? Because we all need retirement savings, we all do. Every one of us, and we're living longer, as you know better than I do as a doctor. How do we make it so that enough people have retirement savings? And so one of the most powerful hacks is opening a Roth IRA early for your children. You can do it as early as they earn any dollars that are external from your household and start to put it away and let it compound for an extra 15 years. It's pretty powerful.
And just even the concept of bringing personal finance education to younger age groups in an age-appropriate way, just, you know, I remember being in elementary school and learning about cumulus, nimbus, and stratus clouds. Totally. And like, there must have been a whole month of the year on clouds, which are great. Like, who doesn't love a great cloud?
Love a cloud.
Love a cloud. But there were so many holes. Like, by the way, besides personal finance, my kids, you know, just the basic idea of the organs of the body, or like the concept that pneumonia means an infection of the lung, or like there are some holes that you could sub out half of the cloud lesson and get in like early personal
finance could change a child's life.
Yeah, I just think that's so interesting.
It's so, and to your point, like we like know so much about clouds.
So much. But I mean, love a cloud.
The world has moved forward. We don't need to worry about the clouds nearly as much. We have the weather app. We know when they're coming.
So it's funny.
It's really fascinating. That's a great example.
If you could give 3 specific pieces of advice to anyone listening to this podcast. A lot of our users are ranging in age from their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. But let's talk about kind of young adults. If you could give 3 specific pieces of advice about, you know, don't make these mistakes or do these things in finance. Do you have them? Okay, I have them.
But
everyone, take out your pen and paper.
My first one is, it's not going to be in finance, but it is something. I worked in the happiness lab at Harvard undergrad, which was like
that.
So delightful, Dan Gilbert. But it's really simple. If you wake up every day and you do one kind thing for somebody else, it has nothing to do with your life. There's no quid pro quo, truly just a, hey, I heard you were looking for something. I thought of an intro. Here you go. You start your day happier. It's the same thing as starting your day with the gratitude. Everybody should do it. It is the right thing to do for the world, and it orients your day in a really positive light. So everyone can do that, and that's free and easy. 2 money tips, I would say. I think for everybody out there, somebody said this to me. I think I was probably 27, 28, and I was like, my head exploded because I was like, that's so true. But as early as you can in your career, figure out what you absolutely are exceptional at. What are you great at? And then figure out what you love to do, and then combine them. And that should be your job. That should be your career. What are you exceptional at? What do you love to do? Because they compound. It compounds. I go to work every day investing in startups, meeting founders, and I literally don't feel like I'm working. I've been doing this now for almost 6 years at Inspired Capital. I do not feel like I work. It is so joyful. And it is a powerful way to compound, because in my free time on the weekends, I'm reading about work because I'm fascinated by stuff. So I'm always working, but I don't feel like I'm working. And so you catch inches on people because you love to do it so much. So that applies to anything. I can tell it is what you are already doing in your career. You love this.
This is what brings you joy.
It's so clear. Haven't gotten to know you, and it compounds. So that's my big money advice, because that is how you make money. And then the final thing I would say is, I think it is really, really important to just remember that I don't care who you marry. I don't care. You must take a seat at your own money table. You need to know what's happening in your finances. Again, if you can do second grade math, you can understand your wallet. You really can. Ask dumb questions, don't be embarrassed, but every single person, male and female, need to understand what's happening in their wallet. And I think that really applies. And it's not something for you to say, oh, so-and-so is gonna take care of it, because money is your lifeline and it is a stabilizing feature in your life. Again, not happiness, stabilizer. And so I think everybody should take a seat at the table.
Yeah, and I think just on that point, it represents not just the ability to acquire things, but freedom, and it gives people opportunities. So I think that, you know, allowing people to think about it a little bit differently and more positively can be helpful.
Totally. And I very much, as you can tell, view money as an empowering tool. It is powerful. It is helpful. It is positive. And I think we all make mistakes, and that's okay. Everyone's going to make mistakes. That's not, you're not damned by making a mistake. Just start working to fix them quickly.
Yeah.
That's how you make money work for you.
Do you have any habits that you know are not financially good, but that you just cannot break?
Do you want to know what my
yes,
are?
Yes, I want to know.
And it's truly, like, it's really, it's amazing. And it really is not that big of, like, a huge problem. But I love flowers. Flowers make me so happy. And it doesn't matter what season, but I will go on Friday and get a big bulk of them, and my kids find me, my husband finds me, and he'll be like, this is like your guilty pleasure. And I'm like, you're right, it's like $30 of flowers from the market, like, but
it's your equivalent of your Starbucks
latte every day. I always joke, I sit there, I chop, I'm like, and I arrange, And I'm like, this is my therapy, and it is so inexpensive. Look how inexpensive my therapy is. And my husband always laughs at me, but it just makes me really happy. So that's like my guilty pleasure, is that and like a ticket to anywhere in the world. I love to travel. I love to like completely be flipped upside down, take me anywhere. One way I'll go. And so I really do love to travel. And I love to travel to like not totally, you know, I wrote my senior thesis on Bhutan. Like I not totally normal on the beaten path places.
Well, this is so fun talking to you. I could talk to you for hours, but I will save you from the rest of your day. Thank you
for taking care of everyone's skin.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you so much for being here. Where can people catch up with you, learn about what you're doing?
Sure.
Buy your books.
Oh, you're so sweet. So Inspired Capital, as if you're building a company, please come talk to us. We literally love to meet founders of all shapes and sizes who are building hugely big visionary companies, changing the world. Generational companies. And then my books are all on, you can go anywhere. Books are sold Amazon. So Financially Forward, Financially Fearless. And then my most recent one is Money Matters with Rebel Girls, for kids everywhere.
Thank you, Alexa.
Thank you.